I ordered some food.
Squid.
I don't do squid anymore. It's a fucking lie.
What else?
And wireless networking now.
Hi, I'm Adrian.
Hi, Adrian.
Happy birthday.
If you want it.
I agreed to do this talk as long as people buy me shots. There isn't anything here to drink besides Diet Coke. Please, somebody order me a shot with something that has whiskey in it.
151? Is it whiskey or without whiskey?
Whiskey.
With whiskey.
It has to be whiskey based. Alrighty, so. Today's talk is on.
You're going to be buying shots for a little whiskey. So why don't you decide what it is?
Just pick something nice. I don't want to think about it.
What do you have in the world?
I
can't
bring any more whiskey out of
the
room.
What kind of whiskey? Something nice. Just pick something.
Okay.
Thank you. I don't have to pay for it, so I don't care.
Anyone else?
Let's start with the
order.
Just
one,
sorry.
Can
I order food? Cod's family on number 70, please.
Some
fries? No
fries. What kind of side?
Salad. Okay.
Thank you. You're
welcome. Can I also be here? Okay. So this talk definitely has my record on written with the least time before the talk was presented. So thank you. So I'm just going to quickly do an informal chat about where previous event is today.
Use the mic.
Yeah,
you
need the mic.
Okay.
Can you stand up?
No, I'm not standing up. Hi, can everyone see me? Too bad if you can't. All right. So, hello. So I'm just going to do a quick informal talk about FreeBSD on embedded hardware and briefly cover some of the fun and less than fun issues I've come up against when trying to do this crap. So I don't really understand why anyone bothered porting FreeBSD to stuff that wasn't Intel, but for some bizarre reason, someone thought it would be good to port to Alpha. I don't recall whose great idea that was, but I just remember it being a pain in the ass. Luckily, it was good preparation work for AMD 64 and Spark 64 and MIPS 64 and PowerPC 64 kinda. But Alpha was the first port. AMD 64 showed up. Yes, I've been in the Linux world too long, but I wouldn't really call AMD 64 really embedded, unless you're EMC.
What's the line between embedded and non-embedded?
That's a later problem. So then, I'll talk about that, honest.
Yeah.
And then, again, for some bizarre reason, we had lots and lots of people who ported FreeBSD 2 and FreeBSD 3, I think, and maybe FreeBSD 4, maybe later FreeBSD, I don't remember the details because I was definitely not involved in that, port to MIPS. And I forget which MIPS platforms, but a whole bunch of different companies had completely different ports. And I think Juniper had more than one MIPS port, more than one separate MIPS port of a different FreeBSD tree. And eventually, I think it reached the this is really fucking stupid point. And a few people got together to try and unify some of that and dump it in the tree. So now we actually have one FreeBSD MIPS port. And at some point, Juniper may actually use it. But it does work. And it works actually very well. ARM, there's a lot of ARM support in FreeBSD, and nobody really knows about that. There's a lot of PowerPC stuff in FreeBSD, but people don't really know what there is out there that's in PowerPC land besides old Macs.
But there's embedded stuff,
there's PPC. Oh, there's a crap ton of embedded stuff. There's a whole bunch of network stuff that's PowerPC. There's a whole bunch of non-PowerPC, non-Apple supercomputer and compute cluster stuff that uses the power core that isn't PowerPC. Well, PowerPC, but not whatever the hell. G3, G4, G5 style naming, right? And Nathan's been doing quite a lot of work making that stuff run, so it's good to hear.
PS3 and Wii.
Pardon?
PS3 and Wii as well.
Yeah, some weird girl gave me a whole bunch of code to commit to the tree a couple of weeks ago. It's like this Wii port magically appeared out of nowhere. I can't really describe what it was like having someone email me like a 5,000 line disk saying this is almost an entire Wii port. So.
We don't even save the kids.
Well, so the only thing that's missing from the Wii port that lets it boot is the LO core stuff, so just the assembly initialization stuff, because that particular code, the patch to make that work is based on Linux, and so once they finish rewriting it, I'll commit whatever that is to the tree. And then apparently I need to help them do Wi-Fi and frame buffer. So it boots. I've actually seen it boot and type stuff at the keyboard. It's kind of cute. keyboard. And there's Spark 64. And there is some embedded Spark stuff out there, but we don't touch it. We just basically run FreeBSD on lots of large Spark machines that Solaris doesn't really care about anymore. So Juniper does a whole bunch of stuff with MIPS. There's also a whole bunch of people who are apparently deploying multi-core MIPS. Multi-core MIPS, FreeBSD on MIPS stuff. I forget the companies involved, but if you look at who commits to the SMP MIPS code, that company sponsors all of that stuff. So there's stuff going on.
You're not thinking of Cadmium, are you?
No, Cadmium's another one. Look at XLR and
RMI.
Yeah, RMI, yeah. So apparently all that stuff works really well, and if someone gave me one, I'd actually try it for myself. FreeBSD ARM runs on a whole bunch of embedded systems, but not mobile phones. Not because it can't, but because no one sat down to do it yet. The line between embedded and not embedded has kind of been a bit blurry, and I guess that's now why FreeBSD has been moving to platforms that isn't really what you think of as servers. Because these days, servers and embedded have sort of crossed over quite a bit, and what you would traditionally think of as servers 10 years ago is now embedded, right? I mean, I hate to say it, but my 700 megahertz MIPS board with 206 meg of RAM on it is kind of creepily big when compared to what I worked on when I finished high school. PFSense runs on all the Intel stuff, but it's pretty big, mainly because they run PHP as their startup script. They don't use, they use PHP for their RC scripts. They don't use shell scripts. That has advantages and disadvantages. Mostly size related. But a lot of people have been putting PFSense on some of the like Socrates boards and Alix boards, which are all geode and now Atom style single core and dual core Intel boards. They deploy bunches of wireless and networking firewall and stuff on that. And that's sort of crossing the boundary between what we think of as embedded and server. Then there's the whole ARM server push that's slowly appearing, and when we talk about quad core ARMs showing up now for people to evaluate, you realize, maybe that whole ARM embedded crap really isn't going to stay very embedded for very long. And there's also that small company, Semihalf, out in somewhere in Europe, who occasionally commit weird crap to the tree, it's to do with MIPS and ARM and embedded. They have a whole bunch of embedded work for a whole bunch of companies. So whenever you see them commit work, it's not because they necessarily love doing it, it's because someone out there is actually actively using it. So it's being used, it's just no one talks about it. What the? Ah. So this is some bizarre KDE bug, which if I hit the function key by itself, it goes away. Sorry?
You need a longer password.
Not for this last time, I'm sorry.
That was a fake echo.
So how well does it run? Oh, yes. Hello.
Yeah. Do you think that part of the ambiguity about this is because of companies online in Linux land? Do you think proprietaries being silent?
No. I think it's because, let me follow that up with which bit in particular are you talking about?
What?
Which bit in particular are you talking about, as in why we don't know who runs it, or?
Well, meaning that there might be code trees you've never heard of.
Oh, of course. But there's probably...
way that you couldn't do on Linux.
Oh, you can do it on Linux, you just have to rename everything. Oh, I'm not shitting you, I've seen companies go through and rename as much crap as they can to hide the fact they're running Linux. Right?
You see that perhaps FreeBSD in this space would become more like a hybrid kernel similar to Dragonfly BSD or getting into the NetBSD space?
What do you mean by a hybrid kernel?
Macro kernel and a micro kernel.
No, it's...
like Dragonfly.
Sorry, like...
like Dragonfly?
Like Dragonfly.
No one's driving the FreeBSD device or process or threading or IPC model towards Dragonfly BSD.
So you don't see that FreeBSD might get more and more connected to what Dragonfly BSD is becoming.
No. And it's not because it couldn't, it's because none of the current developers have stood up and said, this idea works better than what we're doing, so let's push this forward.
Okay. What about similar in any nature to NetBSD in the future, the way
FreeBSD? Well, so this is where things are a bit cute, right? I mean, if you think about it, NetBSD ran on every platform, but ran on every platform slowly. FreeBSD ran on one platform and ran on one platform really freaking well, but God did it want a lot of RAM, right? And so now those two have kind of done this, right? I mean, now NetBSD still runs on all the platforms, but they're definitely having SMP-related issues They're still hitting up against the S&P related issues that we've tried to solve a few years before them, right? And now we're sort of coming towards the multi-platform support they traditionally haven't. And the one thing that I think that they do different and better to us is they're still trying to support lots and lots of platforms.
That's the wrong way to do it. They've got issues that has been for a long time where they should have gone to neural network programming from NetBSD. More neural network programming.
That's mine.
What they should be doing with NetBSD.
Why would they be doing that for?
Because if you're going to be continuing on with NetBSD in any direction of networking, which is really in the embedded space, neural networking makes perfect sense in the embedded space, integrating into robotics and other areas.
What do you mean, as in targeting? Well, the problem really is the majority of people working on embedded stuff are really stupid.
Or AI.
So the problem with, and I'll cover this with OpenWRT, right? 15 years ago, when people were doing embedded stuff, it was a small number of people who were very clueful that worked in areas and made stuff work, right? Nowadays, people are system integrators. They're not developers, right? They want to take an existing system that already runs on their particular platform, and they want to do the minimum amount of effort to make their particular application work, right? And that's it. So, sure, there's all these weird and wonderful things that they could be doing. There's all these weird and wonderful specialities they could be working towards. But at the end of the day, almost everyone who's been deploying Linux in any big way have not been doing it through lots and lots of clueful people. They've taken a vendor's existing tree and then made 10 million routers a month. Right? And that's why things exploded the way that they did. The people like TP-Link and Z-Link, how many units per day do they sell? Probably 500,000. How many lines of code do they contribute back to the kernel? Almost zero. Right? And all the code that they run on their little dinky little wireless routers came from my company. They do very minimal amount of work themselves. So they're just system integrators. And that's where, and I'll cover this later on, that's where the big downfall in the BSD world has been, right? So how well does it all run? Well, my stuff runs really well. But that's mostly because I give a crap. And so it's the tried and true Unix open source way, which is as long as I can make my corner of the code base run, I hope that everyone else doesn't screw it up for me. So whenever people break things like timing or scheduling on MIPS, I get very angry. But by and large, we managed to get the MIPS stuff working at Wi-Fi line rate, which for the cards on the current platforms that's ready to make and the cards on the new Atheros platforms is 450 megabit per wireless card, and then the new 11AC stuff is 1 gigabit per wireless card. So, you know, things are starting to, embedded Wi-Fi and like wide routing is starting to do this, right? I mean, when people think about wireless routers, they're thinking about 50 megabit per second theoretical rate versus real servers that routed the gigabit per second, right? Now I'm going to tell you that the ship we're shipping next year sometime and the ship that Broadcom's shipping right now is 1 gigabit per wireless NIC. That's not really traditional embedded, what you think of as embedded wireless routing, right? It's a completely different ballgame now. So, and a lot of what you count as embedded and a lot of what you count as carrier routing is starting to come together. Apparently the Cavium and the RMI and the XLR multi-core MIPS work is really good if you can get it working. But again, it's one of those things where it works great for whoever uses it. I haven't seen anyone new pop up on the list to say, hey, we want to use this, what do we do? FreeBSD ARM works remarkably well because of some random Eastern European dude who goes by the name of Gonzo, who lives in Canada and occasionally gets shipped ARM boards and occasionally makes a port work. And then magically, it gets committed to the tree. So when you see FreeBSD, all the new FreeBSD ARM stuff like PandaBoard and some of the DreamPlug stuff with the Raspberry Pi and the initial Atheros MIPS stuff, that was all Gonzo doing some port work because he was bored over two weekends. Which is again, you giggle, but all the OpenWRT stuff started the same way, right? It was two or three smart dudes who just copy-pasted a bunch of shit from the source trees that TP-Link and D-Link had to release because of GPL requirements, and they just shaped it up to make it look better and stuff it in the OpenWRT tree, right? And it was all done by these guys doing it in their spare time. So, how Unix works, right? So what platforms does it run on that I've actually played with? All of the current Atheros stuff, but not the current Atheros stuff, works very well, and the multi-core stuff. There's a couple of people that still run FreeBSD on their Macs, and so if you own one of the PVC Macs, apparently it runs really well, including now powers like suspend and resume. And Semihalf have been involved in a bunch of the PPC embedded board stuff. So if you know about the PPC embedded hardware, apparently FreeBSD runs really well on that now. And the R stuff has really caught up, but it's not any of the mobile chipsets. It's just been the embedded wireless SoC, embedded router platforms like home NAS type application platforms, but none of the mobile chips. And why that is because no one's bothered, right? And it comes down to system integration, and I'll rant about that in a minute. Maybe more in a minute.
Can you actually get a hold of those boards?
Yeah, I actually have like a big stack of them at work. And if anyone wants to actually sit down and port FreeBSD ARM to one of the Qualcomm reference designs, I will give you hardware. Right?
Okay.
Right. We actually have a development. We actually have a public development board that we'll give out. It's like $400 for the dev kit. And if anyone wants to port FreeBSD ARM to it, the entire Linux tree for everything that's not a binary blob is there. So all the CPU support, all the USB, all the internet, everything on board, all the CalSafe crap is all documented. The stuff that's closed source is the bootloader, shock horror, the video, shock horror, and the baseband. Right? But that's closed source for pretty much everything that Android runs on anyway. Right? So we wouldn't be any worse off. So now we get down to why does it get used more? Well, we lost out to OpenWRT. We actually ran on a bunch more platforms than Linux did in the embedded space. But then the Linux people happened, which was a few crazy Europeans grabbed the TP-Link and D-Link and a couple of other code drops that they were forced to do for GPL compliance, which were basically a case of having to release their own proprietary source code, which we found quite amusing. And if you can Google online, you can find all the code drops for the port support, some of the CPU, onboard CPU peripheral support. If you look hard enough, you can find some of the wireless support that they shouldn't have released, but they did. And so a lot of the OpenWRT stuff started because they wanted to replace DDWRT as a project on an existing platform that there was support for, and then they found, hey, D-Link have released source for this particular port, TP-Link have done that, blah, 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 and Linksys and so forth, and they just basically copy-pasted the code into their own tree, maintained a completely separate patch set against Linux for a number of years. But the big thing was they made it really easy to build, right? So if you know the magic, you know what, I'll show it to you because I'm on the internet now.
Come on, give me a shot. No, I don't want you to give root prompt, that's kind of annoying. Can people read that? Hell no!
North West. Yeah.
No. That's better, okay. Ah, nope, wrong script.
That is the magic set of weird shit you put on the build line to cross-build an entire build environment. The number of hours it took me to figure this out can be measured in the number of bottles of vodka I've been drinking over that time, because it took a lot of subtle weird shit, like knowing that I needed to set cross-builds testing for some platforms and not others, and these needed to be actually sent to dev null. Otherwise, they use the make conf and the source conf from your base system. And if you have anything that's x86 specific in those files, your cross-build environment will also pick those flags up. And they don't make any sense to MIPS, for example. Right? And since I wanted to be able to build multiple kernels from the same platform, so say I wanted to have half a dozen MIPS kernels but only build one MIPS world, I found that you could actually set those particular options there to tell it what directory to put the kernel in rather than /root/boot/kernel. And so then I could have
something that looks like.
Something that looks like that, where I actually have, I've only got two kernels there at the moment, but I have, you know, 9 or 10 separate boards that I build for. So I have one MIPS root build that gets done once, and then I can just build separate kernels for each one of those and pick those up. That was a pain in the ass to figure out. I don't like reading makefiles. I especially don't like reading FreeBSD makefiles.
Adrian, you looked at Tim Kneisel's R build scripts, things that were.
I know, I already emailed him back saying, why the hell isn't this in the tree?
Yeah, I emailed him back.
Right, same reason.
This will also tell you when you fucked up.
Yes.
This will say, stop, do this.
Yes, which is
pretty useful.
Right, but again, like, why the fuck isn't that in the tree, right? And it just seems a little ridiculous. So mine's online, and at some point I'll put it in the tree, really. Honest, girls. Okay. So what we lack is a single build system that lets us do things that, like, build the kernel for different platforms with the same user land, and I hate to say cross-build ports, but let people build ports on different platforms, because that's the number one annoying thing. When you're trying to build an embedded platform, you want to be able to put random third-party apps on it. And the OpenWRT guys cross-build all of this shit, right? So it's not that we can't do it, it's just they've gone through the process of figuring out what to patch each of their apps to make them cross-build, and we just have the ports guys say, oh, that's too fucking hard, right? And that's fine, because it's their job, not mine. If they want to do that job, then that's fine. If they don't want to attack that job, that's fine. But everyone I've spoken to so far attacks it from the point of view of, how do I make the port system cross-build all 22,000 ports? And my answer is, that's really stupid. Let's figure out what we need to do to make it cross-build a small subset that actually matter, and then slowly see if we can evolve this in a direction, and just tag ports by default as not cross-buildable, and then tag the ones that are cross-buildable as cross-buildable, and make this a five-year project. But I'm not a ports guy, so I'm not going to sit down and tell the ports guys, you must do this or I'm going to hit you, because that gets you very not far. I'm not 15 anymore. I've learned how to deal with other nerds. Yes, George.
So just purely the platform in relation to ports, what is wrong with that obviously, I'd say, upstream?
No problem. NanoBSD doesn't cross-build ports.
But it doesn't need...
How do I install FIDIC or ICD or CPD? How do I install Perl or Python or PHP in my VIX environment? Right now, when I build OpenWRT, it builds all of that crap for me.
Oh, right. I'm just trying to remember.
Right?
But,
you know, we can cross-build our entire source tree, and I've seen what people do. They'll actually shoehorn third-party software in user source contrib blah, and they'll blow that directory out to have all of their third-party things as vendor branches, and then run the build scripts inside that, and I've done it before, but that doesn't scale very well, so let's not do that. However, some crazy Europeans, it's always the fucking crazy Europeans, right? Eastern Europeans, right? God damn it. They, PackageNG specifically doesn't handle that.
But will.
Huh?
But will.
Yeah, if someone cross-builds ports, they'll support that installation and management format, but they don't support cross-building them to start with. Like, I have this discussion with that. If someone makes the cross-build work, he will cross-build, cross-create PackageNG packages for each of those target platforms. And yeah. All right, so the crazy Europeans started a project called ZRouter, where they took FreeBSD and they've done an OpenWRT style thing on lots of different platforms. And I've been working with a few of those guys to push their patches into FreeBSD, because for some weird reason, they want to maintain a completely separate mercurial fork of FreeBSD and not merge anything back. Yes. Well, we worked with one of them to get a commit bit, and he's been slowly moving his work into FreeBSD head, but it takes time, right? It's like working with any normal company. It just happens to be a bunch of Eastern European enthusiasts. And my pull scripts are online, but don't ever use that for anything commercial.
Russian or Ukrainian?
Ukrainian. And he speaks Russian as well, but yeah, he's actually lives in Ukraine. He works for D-Link in Ukraine. The other problem is FreeBSD is too fucking big. Oh, I like how these two guys, like, John and, yep, and George's heads just go, yink! So the default MIPS build is 3.5 meg, right?
What? You don't have any MIPS machine? What's wrong with you? Here's a coordinate,
like someone remember? Yes, yes. So some of our embedded stuff is 16 meg of RAM and a 4 meg of flash. And then, and some of the cheap-ass Chinese shit has 16 meg of RAM and 4 and 2 meg of flash. Right? Those little TP-Link 3G USB dongle wireless routers you can buy off eBay for like $15, they have 2 meg of flash.
But will they run FreeBSD?
Next year, yes.
Last year?
Next year.
Next year.
Right? But we can't fit the kernel and user and any kind of user land based on our user land in 2 meg of flash. Right? And 16 meg of RAM turns out to be just not enough to bring up a user land, because everything about our user land is too fucking big. Libc and the crypto are really, really big. SH is like 280k of compiled binary before it links to any libraries. That's really big. Netstat and procstat and like some of those utility as well. I can show you.
Actually, because I've got a bill here somewhere.
Like, if I want to put PFCTL on an embedded platform, that's the MIPS binary. It's 287k minus shared libraries. Right? If I have 4 meg of flash, what the fuck am I supposed to do with that? The answer is not for PF on my device. Right?
Where was the... IPFW is actually pretty freaking small.
Well, you mean the command is small.
Yeah, so sysstat is pretty big, but it's expected to be big. Netstat's pretty big.
You can build netstat without stuff in it.
Well, so the problem you're actually complaining about isn't that the system is too large in itself, is that no one has gotten to do the work of breaking the system down into smaller libraries. Right, if you look at something like a short embedded system like the XORs of PSOS, or any of the old style ones, I need to get another shot.
Yes.
Before I finish my sentence. But anyway, if you look at any of the old style embedded systems, they were built up from much smaller libraries. Like libc in the XORs is not as large as libc in any of the Unix because you knew that you had a very small amount of space, so now you've got to go through with a knife and cut everything up.
Well, so the number one thing I would do is ditch Y character support in its fucking entirety and anything locale related. Unfortunately, that would piss off a very large chunk of our committer base. Because for embedded stuff, you don't necessarily need your base libraries to support all the Y character versions of all of the varied functions there. Sorry? Right. But that's actually one of the first things that got cut from the original OpenBSD Android fork, right, was, hey, it's a base library, we don't give a shit about Y character support, that's a presentation layer problem, not a core Unix layer problem, yes?
But in strategizing about this, is anyone thinking about likely future bombs?
Like what?
Well, just meaning, you know, what is the roadmap for bombs generally looking out, you know, 12 months,
6 months? Oh, no one's actually sat down and come up with a concise embedded platform. It's mostly been roadmap. It's mostly been crap we talk about on ISE.
Well, if I did, it's better getting it. It must be, like, in other words, whatever the threshold is for something that's going to be mass produced, cheap ass bomb that'll be, you know, the minimum.
Are you talking about hardware bomb or software bomb?
Hardware.
Right. I'll tell you right now what that is. It's six. The low level stuff is 8 meg of RAM and 2 meg of flash.
Right, I get that.
And we ain't doing that. Neither does Linux.
You know, where's that going to be in
16
months and
48
months?
Oh, okay. It'll be exactly there. No. Sorry. This is the problem, right? Is it's going to be there again in 12 months or 24 months. Like 16 meg of RAM and 2 meg of flash. 8 meg of RAM and 2 meg of flash isn't going to change. Mainly because those weird-ass Chinese people seem to want to just put VxWorks on something and save the 30 cents it would cost them to add the extra RAM and flash, or 50 cents, right? So 5 years down the track, there's still going to be 1 million embedded devices a month made from TP-Link and D-Link each that have 8 meg of RAM and 2 meg of flash.
But isn't that driven by, I know something about it, but it's usually driven by the cheapest generation of...
But the thing is, they keep making these things cheaper. So it's not like we've hit some magic cost bottom where we're able now. Right.
And my understanding is that what will change is that whatever the lowest cost Chinese bomb is driven by what is the prevailing low cost chip technology. So if the thing that's cranking out chips happens to be 4 or 8 megabyte minimum, that's what they're going to use.
Yes, but for some weird reason, they're still shipping lots of 2 meg stuff. Yes, you're right. But yes.
I don't know.
As someone who works for a company that makes the chips that these guys keep asking for, I believe the answer is yes.
Okay.
Now, what the Linux guys also said is, we're not supporting that crap. Like, 16 meg of RAM is the bare minimum to even boot a Linux kernel in any meaningful way that they've decided. So, you can boot Linux on an 8 meg device, yet they don't want you to, right? Same with us. I've set my particular limit at 16 meg of RAM and 4 meg of flash. If someone wants to sit down and help me split it down and run on an 8-meg machine, I'll give them a FreeBSD 2 tree and they can port MIPS to port that to MIPS. That will make me very happy.
RetroBSD?
So, again, like, you could port all of the... Someone's actually asked me in a FreeBSD capacity, hey, could we port FreeBSD's wireless stack to FreeBSD 4 or FreeBSD 2? Like, I'll worry about embedding it, but can you make it run on that?
No, BSD 2.
No, I know, but, I mean, the similar idea, right?
Which is, okay, scale.
So, yeah, because they want to be able to embed it on some ridiculously small thing, and I'm like, there is the source code. If you write me a 5.5-figure check, I will do it. Otherwise, go away. Right?
Well, I mean, you know about the retro BSD.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about way smaller.
Yeah, but, like, it's like, okay, so the... So the Wi-Fi stack in FreeBSD is
okay.
Like 900K.
You can't talk about Wi-Fi on,
yes. So anyway, I guess what this means is now we're looking at it from two different sides. The traditional FreeBSD way has been machines have lots of RAM, and we're going to optimize our stuff to run fast, assuming we have some minimum amount of RAM, and that's been, a few hundred meg, right? And if you have a few hundred meg, then there are a lot of corners you can cut. And the embedded guys are going, no, wait a second. Every time you add something new to the kernel, that mass-produced system is not going to be recycled every year or two like Intel. It's not like I can add more RAM to a system. You have to think that when I make a chip, and a chip has, like an embedded chip is going to have the maximum amount of RAM you can attach, that's not going to grow in the next 5 years. And they're going to make a million of them a month, per vendor, per product, right? And that crap's going to be out there. And on the Intel world, this stuff gets cycled every 3 months at the very least, right? So, if your application needs a little bit more RAM than currently supported, you just wait 6 months. And you hope that somebody puts a terabyte of RAM in the machine, and some people keep trying. So it's a slightly different way of looking at it, yes.
So when was the last time, or at what point did we get 16 megabytes of RAM and 4 megabytes of flash?
As a requirement?
As a requirement. Like, when did we get to that point when the embedded manufacturer started producing chips with that?
9 years ago.
Oh, okay. That's what I was asking.
Right, yeah, so this is the thing, right? To answer your question earlier, right? 16 meg of RAM and 4 meg of flash has been this strange-ass minimum that has been there since before, like 2000. It just happened to be that was expensive. Now it's cheap to do that, right? But some embedded systems get more RAM. But that 16 meg of, minimum amount of RAM still seems to be the sweet spot for a lot of this really cheap stuff. So now you're a router that would have cost you $500 in 2000, now cost you $5 to make, right? And that's prices gonna keep going down, so they keep wanting to sell more of them, yes?
My observation is that FreeBSD got a hell of a lot better between the 4.x tree and the 5.x tree, and then a monumental jump between 5 and 6. I've had some correspondence with some people on the core team about, hey guys, this is like, really bad for small systems and routers and so forth. And the response I get is basically apathetic.
Well, no, you got to remember, open source is driven either by companies who have a vested interest in making something work, or individuals who only give a shit about their own internal use and their own pleasure of programming or whatever their particular focus is. And, the fact is, most of the systems that previously were running on weren't memory constrained, right? And if companies needed memory constrained, they would have stuck with FreeBSD 2 or FreeBSD 4. And there are still companies that do, right? It was driven by what the developers either needed to do for work or did for themselves. There wasn't really an overarching, hey crap, we have to fit inside this particular thing. If you want to, expand the TCP stack, you have to shrink the routing stack in order to balance out code load and whatnot. There was never any of that. So yeah, you're right, but it's not apathy, it's more, am I going to be able to do that as part of my day-to-day hacking? Or is that unnecessarily creating a whole lot of extra work for me that I'm not going to have fun doing, right? Now, if someone magically came along and hired a bunch of programmers and said, hey, we want to put FreeBSD on a phone, it's time to slash everything and make the locking stuff deal with sleeping correctly and make everything low power and, oh crap, it's called Android, right? That's, if someone came along and did that, then chances are that work would get done and then there'd be a 5-year how the fuck do we merge this into FreeBSD argument, which is exactly what you saw with Linux. Up until Android, Linux ran really shitty on phones, right? And it's not that people didn't come up to the Linux guys and say, how do you run on phones better? Like, most of the Linux developers are like, hey dude, like, pay up or shut up. Like, I'm hacking on my own stuff. Why are you trying to create new work for me when I'm not going to get paid, right? And the people that could do it tended to not be easily pushed around. So yeah, please don't miss... A mistake that people make when they deal with open source groups is they mistake apathy for, I can't take on any more work. Because if they take on any more work, they'll burn out and start drinking heavily. And as someone who's been there and been abused heavily by companies, I can tell you it's not a good experience.
So becoming Apple employees?
Yes. Last question before I move on.
In your experience, are these, when you're sending chips out in the field, are the end users actually involved in any sort of service, like in general, basically my question is, are people deploying this stuff and then actually updating anything later, or does it generally just go out and use whatever was
included with no one ever updates? Oh man, if you buy a TP-Link or a D-Link or a Linksys router, you only update when shit doesn't work at all. And even then, you're more likely to bring it back to the shop than you want to update it.
But your Panasonic
television one. That one's previous either,
right? And that updates itself over Ethernet.
I know, and, yeah. So some embedded, some embedded stuff will do it properly. But I know that, right? I know a lot of other television vendors that happen to use previous DNA television, but they'll never say anyway. So the low-cost stuff, they don't do that, because the minute they've shipped a box, that's it. They don't want any fucking support overheads, right? Nothing, because their entire revenue model is focused on ship units, fuck the customer, right? In 12 months' time, when that shit burns out because it's fucking over, it's like the flash is filled up with log files, or the cracks burn itself out, they don't care. They'll go, oh, it cost me $50, I'll buy a new one, right? So, yeah. Okay, Jay Malik pre-allocates a whole bunch of memory pools at startup, and even if you turn on Malik production, it has this really annoying habit of still bloating the resident size. So login and LS and shell are like 1 megabyte RSS each. And on a 16 meg system, 1 megabyte of stuff just for each username process is fucking retarded, okay? Like, to the point where I can't run KLD load to load my wireless module and allocate enough buffers, because the minimum amount of user land I need to run init, login, sh, and KLD load is too much. I could go exec KLD load, right, and that will work great. So, the other thing here is we're no different to Linux in this particular respect. No one puts Linux, Debian, or Ubuntu, or Red Hat, or CentOS on a fucking router, right? OpenWRT does not use Linux OSs. It's a completely separate distribution. They run BusyBox, they run Dive, or UClipc, or whatever the hell it is. They have a completely cut down version of the runtime. So it's not like we're doing anything different than the default Linux-based systems. It's just, I haven't bothered doing anything different. I wanted to use our base system as much as possible and see how far I could push it. The answer is, it's all too big. And the other thing is, we're all really bad at writing documentation. We can talk, and some of us can even code. But what we really are lacking is someone to sit down and make our documentation appealing to people that may want to use FreeBSD. So as I showed you, cross-building stuff is a pain in the ass, which is why I committed to put all my cross-build stuff online, and I've had nothing but praise from people for solving all of these weird cross-building and the base system issues. OpenWRT is a prime example of how this crap should be done, which is, it may look really crappy when you start looking under the hood of how the build system works, but it works, right? So you type make config, and it gives you a list and says, which packages would you like me to compile for you, sir, and what target platform would you like me to build for, sir, and which routers in this target platform would you like me to build, sir, and it'll go off and do all that crap for you and drop you all the embedded platform images. So if you build, say, a MIPS platform and you turn on 20 packages, you can actually say, I want MIPS Big Endian, and I want MIPS Big Endian, and I'm going to do it to target these 15 Theros wireless routers, because the only thing that differs is what the kernel compile and what modules to install. But the user land for all those 15 platforms is exactly the same, right? So instead of building one entire image for each, an entire build world and install world and ports run for each of those things, their build system builds one base system run for the target architecture platform, and then lots of kernel builds, one for each of the target devices, and then build you firmware images for each of those. So I can just as easily build for one Theros embedded device as all of them at once. And for people who are deploying Theros, like people who are running OpenWRT in half a dozen different variations of a port, it's really freaking easy, right?
So yeah, it's your people need handholding, you give people tools to break it. And you know, this, the Linux people are a prime example of how much care about whether it's elegant or not. They just want to get work done, right? It's making it elegant is a later problem, and it's always a later problem. So when you look at OpenWRT's build system, it isn't always pretty, but it's enough to get some, to get actual real work done. And the Drupal people will use it because they don't care about it. They've got a job to do. So what's in progress? We actually have a Raspberry Pi 4. It apparently boots. When I get back to San Jose next week, I'll even bring up FreeBSD on a Raspberry Pi to see how well it works. And apparently the Panda board and all the DreamPod stuff all works very well. So if you wanted to play around with FreeBSD ARM, there is a lot of really cheap, under $100 embedded ARM platforms that work really well. All the FreeBSD mix stuff, I'm trying to sit down and find time to document, but I know I suck at documentation. So I'm trying to get together a list of all of the wireless routers that FreeBSD will build on, and have build scripts to build images for those routers, so people can do that.
So at the moment the BeagleBone works better than the Pi. I've got them both.
Right.
The Pi is cheaper, but almost impossible to get unless you have someone. I actually recommend the BeagleBone if you're going to play with ARM at the moment.
I mean, the Panda board is...
It took me 15 minutes to follow the direction and get it current.
The Panda board is really nice, but expensive compared to the Raspberry Pi. Like, it's a couple hundred dollars, right?
The Pi is like $35 for the current one you can get, and the BeagleBone is $89. So you can get the BeagleBone today. You can just word it, it will
depend. Depending on the backer.
I don't like that.
Go to 70.
You got me this job. Is this you?
No, it's you, George.
Thank you. So being totally selfish, the current version of Theros stuff uses NIP74K. And so I put the challenge out there to say, if someone ports FreeBSDs of that thing, I'll do the wireless chipset support. And then Warner said, I'll do it. So now he called me out, right? And I have to port the wireless support. So that's... Because he's doing all the ARM stuff that we've agreed to wait until November. Okay. So come November, I'm going to ship him a whole box of assorted, up-to-date Theros embedded board goodies. And... it shouldn't take too long. NIP74K is NIP24K with a couple of extra option registers and a slightly weirder pipeline. And it should mostly just work already, right? It's just I want to not take ownership of doing all the things. I'd like to spread out the love so I can focus on the couple of things I'm doing really well. Because otherwise I'll burn out and then, you know. Squid gave me a drinking problem. And the other thing to do is try and slim the kernel down because... The gap between the number of devices that ship with 32 megabit RAM and 16 megabit RAM is ridiculously big. And if we can get FreeBSD running as an actual viable platform in 16 megabit RAM, which it almost is, it's not that far off, right? There's just a few really stupid shit things that go on when you compile things. We can target a whole lot of very interesting things. So I'll try and do it for MIPS, it's just gonna take time. The unfortunate problem with this, right, one of the unfortunate things, because we're stuck in GCC 4.2.1 for MIPS, it generates really bad MIPS code.
That should be fixed soon.
With Clang?
Yeah, because Dave Chisnell is working on Sherry with Robert, and that's MIPS. You should talk to David and see if he's got something. The other thing, by the way, on this...
That's why I'm not worried about that so much, right?
Yeah, so the other thing that's moving kernel now, by the way, is one of the things we talked about at the Dev Summit was turning all the network stuff into a library, which is something Juniper wants to contribute.
Right.
So if you look at the Juniper patch that was posted in
that. I saw that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, that may give you the ability to work with more stuff. Because the network stack is huge. It's the largest part of the kernel.
So, I mean, I've got some pie-in-the-sky ideas. Like, say, we could, in theory, write a replacement, like leave the routing stack in there and bridging stuff and write a very lightweight replacement IP stack that's just for embedded devices where we don't have to do 100,000 TCP connections a second. So why the hell optimize for that, right? Like port FreeBSD 4.4 IP stack to an embedded thing, stick it behind a giant lock and say, if you're doing TCP to an embedded device, it must be for management or BGP, right? And people have actually done this, right? There were ports of this to... So there was lots of stuff like that, but it's really stupid crap. Like, I had an argument with Pavel like 6 or 9 months ago because the NFS ACL V4 and POSIX V4 ACL stuff was in the default kernel build, but only used by ZFS, right? And so I said, bugger that, turn it into a module, build it as a module, and if you need it for ZFS, we'll make it as a load time dependency. But he really wanted that code there because he wanted it to be there for ZFS, because he didn't want to have existing systems break because the existing code all assumed that code was statically compiled into the kernel. There's time counter stuff that's statically compiled. All of Lawrence Stewart's up-to-date fine-grained time counter stuff for TCP tracking, that's all now a default in the kernel. Like, there's a lot of stuff that's default in the kernel that probably shouldn't be there for an embedded system unless you're doing research. Jails is quite big because of all of the complicated ACL checks that are done. I can't build IPv6 in a kernel on a 16-meg device because it actually bloats things quite significantly. And I can't KLD load it at runtime because it's not bootable as a module. And even if it were bootable as a module, right now too many device drivers and network components have ifdef inet and ifdef inet 6 for various bits of protocol fudging, which they really shouldn't, right? I mean, I think that should be a separate build option. And if we ever support the idea of like network stack modules, just build them both into device drivers. And if they never see a v6 frame, then they don't have to handle it differently. But that's a different rant for later, right? I'm just saying it's too big. So, yes. That's the last slide. Okay. Anyone have any questions? Yes.
You see that, since we're discussing all the issue generally with trying to get the FreeBSD system into embedded systems, that the biggest problem is a lack of overall centralized vision by FreeBSD and where they want to be.
So FreeBSD has no centralized vision.
And then, therefore, the community itself is doing a lot of so much infighting that they don't...
There's no infighting like that.
Okay.
There's no politics in terms of that.
Okay.
The whole... So, from an embedded perspective, people's embedded targets have been very focused on certain large memory footprint embedded devices, right? So the people building, like Juniper, they don't build a fucking router with 16 meg of RAM. Thank you. Right? They'll have a mix board with a few hundred meg minimum and maybe gigabytes by default, right?
It's just depending on where a person wants to create an embedded device and what they consider an embedded device.
The biggest thing with open source software is if you want something to happen, you either have to do it yourself or you pay someone else to do it. Otherwise, people just work on what they want to work on.
Right, or a consortium between corporations and...
Right. But the point is no one's really stood up and asked for, hey, we would like to be able to run FreeBSD on these embedded systems, because it's been a catch-22, right? They don't see it as running, so they don't think it's a viable option. Now that people are seeing it running, they're going, hey, now that it's running, we would like to be able to run this, and then, you know, once we're running it, they've got a stake in making sure it continues.
Right. That might be about rewriting an operating system to work in an embedded space from the basis of being embedded and expand from there into a more advanced operating system that still be a BSD operating system.
Again, if someone wants to do that, they're more than welcome to participate, but it boils down to finding either a company that wants to pay, or...
I think it's something like user source management.
You find a way to somehow convince 300 developers who are between the ages of 17 and 25 and really suggestive. You find a way to convince them for 9 months to do what you tell them to do.
Generally, though, that would happen. You have to have a smaller group and really...
No, but this is how Linux started. Linux didn't start by companies investing shitloads of time. And BSD didn't start by companies investing shitloads of time. Right?
But that stage is over, though.
No, they were definitely over.
Now you look at where you have to be, your company at that
point. But no company wants to invest time in their new OS. This is why Android is so popular, right? And why everyone except Nokia has been dropping their own local OS on an Apple like a fucking hotcake, right? Because the Android stuff got the minimum amount of work done needed to get an OS onto a phone, and for some bizarre reason, the Android company, before Google bought them, decided they could do it with Linux, right? And that was the difference. That was what made Android work. Somebody stood up and said, I am going to make this shit work. Fuck you bitches. I don't care what you and in the Linux community say, I'm going to fucking do it, right? And when I was at the Linux Summit, everyone's talking about, oh, Android, blah, 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 Linux is so popular. And I went, no, you guys have spent 5 years trying to merge this shit into the kernel, right? If Android came today and said, hi, we would like to begin working on a phone-oriented Linux kernel version. We would like to work with the Linux open source community to build a phone-targeted OS and just start pushing shit upstream. They would never get anything shipped. There would be so much crap going on trying to get each individual thing nicely, neatly wrapped and pushed up into the kernel, no one would ship a phone. They'd run out of money, right?
Somebody did.
Yeah.
So the reason that Android happened was a small startup said, fuck the bureaucracy, and they went along and made it work, and they got Linux onto so many more devices than anyone else bar TP-Link and D-Link ever dreamed of, and then the Linux community took 5 years to merge it back. Right? And something has to happen here like that.
It's funny, if you actually put it in a bigger perspective, in the meantime, like, NetBSD was running on Sidewinders that T-Mobile had.
Right.
You know, for years, then it just disappeared. And it stopped. I mean, like, this stuff goes on constantly. I mean, and, like, to sit there and dwell on, like, if this tweak happens with this project or that project, it's somehow or another, it's a magic bullet.
So, here's the thing, I work for Qualcomm at Theros, right? Our marketing department say FreeBSD doesn't run on any of our chips. We don't support it. It doesn't run. And I sat there in a meeting and I said, here is one of your development platforms, and here is an untouched FreeBSD head running on that platform. You can't do that with Linux. Like, the support for all the devices in our embedded stuff isn't upstream in the kernel yet, because there's so much slightly like infighting going on, trying to massage crap into the right thing. And I just went, fuck it, I want this shit into the tree, and magically crap just started going into the tree and no one called me out over it. And as long as no one calls me out over it, I'm going to keep committing random crap to the tree, right? Because I want the default FreeBSD install. Hey, dude, if I don't break the tree once a week, I'm having a good week.
Right? No more shots.
Because I haven't had this one yet, because the goals of the company don't align with the goals of the open source project. And so, yeah, sometimes what will happen is the company has to go off, break the mold, get something working. And, you know, if someone wants to take, and so this, I'm looking at you here, right? If someone wants to take FreeBSD ARM and put it on the Qualcomm Snapdragon, which means it will run on everything on a normal Qualcomm phone except the broadband unit, I will give away boards, right, until that happens. Right? Because the hardware is there and all the programming documentation is there, and if I can boot FreeBSD on a phone that now has a gig of RAM, so it's not like I'm memory constrained in the traditional sense. Yeah, I know, right? I mean, holy crap, my phone has a gig of RAM! So if someone wants to do that, I don't care what you do to the FreeBSD tree to make that work. I want to be able to demo it inside the company and say, here is exactly what happened with Android, but now it's happening with BSD. Right? But until someone does that, the companies aren't going to pay attention. Huh?
So which RAM core is it?
I don't know, you have to look at, yes, Google Snapdragon, and they have a whole bunch of different ARM cores.
Yeah.
Anyone other questions? Yeah, like I have, but this is an old Qualcomm Snapdragon and this piece of crap here, right? Qualcomm ship a whole lot of ARM core stuff that they push Linux onto, and the reason they push Linux onto it is because people already put Linux onto it. Do you think Qualcomm would have ported? And by the way, I'm not speaking in my capacity as an employee at Qualcomm or Theros or any of its affiliates. Do you think a large company would bother porting Linux to something new unless someone paid them to do so? The only reason they're doing this is because Android became a reason to sell chips. Right? That's the only reason. And before that, they were porting Symbian and fucking VxWorks. And yes?
Did we ever define embedded?
Yeah. Well, actually,
I think... Embedded is really blurry. This is what it boils down to.
Yeah, well, Alex Ford from Sophos Boxes versus, system on chip or,
Yeah, but you wave on...
You also got the issue between whether or not something is real-time or non-real-time.
Right.
There is no real-time. QNX versus FBX?
There is.
Yeah, but, I mean... VxWorks and QNX run on big hardware as well, right?
Correct. And embedded systems like
Drupal. And embedded systems as well. It's just they don't scale the way that FreeBSD and Linux do for a certain subset of tasks.
Correct.
So embedded is basically anything that you want to define it as. It doesn't. And now there's no line to draw in the sand, right? If I take an Intel box, if I take a dual core Atom, glue a flash card onto the side, and make it run off 12 volts, is that embedded? Because the only difference between that and my laptop is an LCD screen. And maybe a keyboard, right? And maybe a hard disk, but maybe not a hard disk. I mean, I've got some laptops now that don't have hard disks anymore and run fucking Android. So...
It could also be deterministic programming for a specific task oriented.
Right, and so a lot of the embedded stuff
embedded.
Is... Yeah, but I had this great discussion with a friend of mine about, how to implement real-time changing priorities, and I sat down with him and I explained to him, you know, how some of these embedded OSs manage to do that. And the answer is, they say there's only 32 tasks ever on the system, right? And they will run, you know, and you add some code that will trigger a watchdog or whatever to make sure any particular task doesn't overflow their time interval. And you can then do a whole bunch of really inefficient algorithms to guarantee scheduling deadlines, because you've only got 32 possible tasks. But those algorithms don't scale to 30,000 threads, right? By any stretch, yeah, and John's giggling. So, you know, it...
focus on specific tasks, but object-oriented programming is going to be necessary. So if you're going to be putting...
It's not
hard real-time.
No, but... Object-oriented programming just entices programmers to be more lazy. It's not that you could, you won't necessarily do any good, or any worse.
And actually, the bigger problem you have is virtual memory. Once you have virtual memory, then doing...
Then people will slack. Yeah.
If you're going, let's say you want to start off an embedded system and scale it up to the servers, or as a user, and being able to use it in the user space, then...
But then you have stuff like, if I was going to write a small embedded network app, I'd just use Polar Select, because they're only going to support up to 200 concurrent connections. Why go through the overhead of having all this crap in the kernel and use it for event-driven programming? That ain't going to scale in the real world on a bloody Netflix 40 gig E server. But for my small target market of an embedded box, that app works well. So what I try to tend to say to people is, if you can write your app in a way that scales, is that way? Great. But don't have that be your goal. Sometimes the right thing to do is to have, you know, two cores and some support stuff around it that target two separate markets, and to make it easy to share as much code as you can. But you can't, solving the general problem turns out to be really hard, right? And the Linux guys and then the BSD guys try to solve the general problem, but there's a reason why you can't run Linux on really, really small things. Like, dude, 8 meg of RAM used to be more memory than my fucking Linux 1213 machine had. My Linux 1230 machine came up with 4 meg and ran X. Why can't I do that now? It's not like suddenly we've lost the ability to write code that small. It's just we don't write code that small. We could write code that small. That's what VxWorks is for. But that's just not what we do.
Adrian, the other term you haven't used today, which should help delineating the...
Do I need to take a shot before you mention it?
Just appliance.
Right.
You have embedded. You have... Like, a nice long box is an appliance, yeah. Right? But it's a big fucking appliance. It uses a lot of power and a lot of room.
And regardless if you drop it on your toe.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit too
easy. It also has a wallet if you drop it on your toe.
But there's a difference between an embedded device and an appliance, right?
Right.
Appliance is really Unix in a box without a screen.
Right. Any other questions?
So is it